The various Redwood parks, state and national, are beautiful to behold, and people travel from all over the country and the world to see them and spend time in them. But the travelers are seldom aware that there's frequently work going on to make the redwoods look and act more like natural redwood forests. The work includes restoration projects like one underway in the Middle Fork of Lost Man Creek in Humboldt County. Let's hear what's up there. Leonel Arguello is the Redwood National Park Chief of Vegetation Management and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Leonel, thanks for joining us.
Sure, no problem. Can you hear me well enough?
I can hear you just great, and I hope you can hear us as well. Yep. It seems like in a park that is based on people coming to look at vegetation, a.k.a. trees, that your job is a very big one.
It is, and I've been doing this job since 1988. I've really enjoyed my time here. I love the redwoods. Grew up in San Francisco, and I've lived in Humboldt County for 32 years now, and walking in the redwood forest and all of the associated ecosystems that surround the redwood forest. It's not just the redwoods, but all of it, from seashore to the grasslands up on the mountaintops. It's just a beautiful place to come visit and see.
Whole lot of stuff to manage for sure. So let's start with some history. I mean, there's lots, obviously, of protection of redwoods now, but how did the protected lands often come into government hands?
Well, in the case of Redwood National Park, the park was originally established in 1968 through congressional action and authorization, and it created a fairly smallish park that had at its core the protection of a grove on Redwood Creek called the Tall Trees Grove. And there, within that grove, were some of the tallest trees in that time, in the 60s, that were discovered by the National Geographic Society. And so the movement was to create a national park in Redwood Creek and some of the associated watersheds in order to protect this grove and some of the superlative redwoods at that time. The park then expanded in 1978 to incorporate almost 50,000 additional acres. And again, that was purchased from local timber owners who were selling and local landowners who sold to the government. And that, for the most part, formed what we have today as the national park. And then within the boundaries of the national park are three California state parks, Jedediah Smith State Park, Del Norte Coast Redwoods State Parks, and Prairie Creek State Park. And those three state parks have gone through their own different increases in land base to the extent that today we have a state and national park that is co-managed and works under a cooperative agreement to manage these beautiful resources in tandem, and it encompasses 135,000 acres.
Was there a great deal of logging on some of these lands in the past, Leonel?
Yes. The park as a whole, so when I speak about the park, I'll reference Redwood National State Parks, the entire
sure.
complex.
Okay.
That we have roughly about 45,000 acres of old-growth redwood. The rest of the 135,000 acres, a lot of it, in a way, not the rest of it, but a lot of it is cutover lands, lands that were part of the industrial timber era, and definitely a lot of the lands were in production for timber and for lumber production, and that's what we have today. And these are the landscapes that, as a national park and as state parks, we're trying to address some of the impairments within those landscapes, to address some of the conditions that we find there, in order to help these forests and recover from the logging era, and reduce and remove some of the roads that are erosional threats into the aquatic systems.
So, Leonel, how much replanting work was done? What was the state of the art back in that time on the lands that have been acquired as part of the park's complex? I mean, were they generally being replanted with the hope of growing redwoods all over again?
Absolutely. The timber companies were growing, they were growing and managing their landscapes for the production of wood. So they were doing what was at the time of the creation of at least the national park. The state parks have been around since the 20s and 30s. They're very old state parks. For the most part, they're almost all old growth parks. But the timber companies were planting. They were cutting and planting and managing. They would come in after a clear cut. They would either seed in or hand plant their next cohort of trees. They would manage those trees through some pre-commercial thinning at some point in order to release and allow for the remainder of the trees to grow for another maybe 20, 30, 40 years. And then they would come in and commercially harvest that stand over again. The stands that we acquired were well-stocked. And one thing you got to understand about the coastal environment here is that you expose some of the ground to seed, especially seed rain from adjacent stands of forest. You know, they're going to come in, the seeds are going to take hold. Things grow here very well on the coast. And so whether or not it's hand-planted, seeded in by the timber companies, or just a natural seed rain from adjacent stands, the clear cuts are covered over quite quickly with vegetation, starting with shrubs and the next cohort of trees. So what we inherited as a national park was a very dense second-growth stands that were a combination of those three factors, seeding, aerial seeding, hand-planting, and natural seed rain.
Seed rain, meaning that literally it just falls like rain from the trees nearby?
Yeah. Nature, for conifers, you know, when the seeds are ripe in their cones, the seeds, the bracts open up in the cones and the seeds shed and they float by wind onto the adjacent landscapes. Now, in an old growth setting, the seeds may not find purchase to grow because there's lots of competing vegetation. But you can imagine that where the seeds find open, bare ground from a recent clear cut, they're going to find that ground to salvage and grow. And they often do so very well.
We're talking about forest restoration in the Redwood National and State Parks with Leonel Arguello, who is the Chief of Vegetation Management for the Redwood National Park. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments, 800-838-3760 throughout the region, 800-838-3760, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So you mentioned being there since 1988. I wonder, did a lot of the restoration work begin before you, or has it come along in your time?
Most of it before me, started in 1980 with the expansion. Well, with the expansion of the park in 1978, it acquired, of those nearly 50,000 acres that were acquired, 41,000 acres were cut over lands. So they were lands that were identified for a restoration program. And that was in order to protect the tall trees grove downstream, downhill. And so there was already a program in place by the time I came on scene. And you have to realize, in 1988, I started as a student seasonal, so it wasn't like I came in here as the chief.
You weren't in charge then. Okay, got it.
Yeah, I was not in charge of anything except for getting to work on time. You know, over the years, we've added some additional restoration programs. We built up a prescribed fire program in this park. We've ramped up an exotic plant removal and management program. That's something that is occurring within my shop. And so there's been a variety of different initiatives and programs that have come up. But by and large, most of the restoration was in place and operating by the time I showed up on scene.
Leonel, we have an email here from John and Eugene. He says that decades ago when the park was established, loggers were told you can remove what you cut up until the day the park is established, even if it is within the boundaries of the soon-to-be-established park. He says the pace of cutting went wild and vast tracts that conservationists had envisioned as remaining vertical after park establishment were felled and removed. My brother and I walked the length of Redwood Creek, and witnessed the devastation a few days after the establishment of the park. My question, writes John and Eugene, was this oversight in wording a clever wink and a nod to the timber companies or a true loophole, or have I been misinformed all these years? Again, that from John and Eugene. So a couple of claims made there, which I wonder you can clear up for us.
Well, you know, from 1968 to 1970, now we're talking history here, so I'm going to do my best to represent the history. I was not around at that time, but the history was that the park was the original park in 1968 included this very narrow strip of land that went up the corridor of Redwood Creek. All the way, they called it the Worm, and it was a bit of land on either side of Redwood Creek that snaked up Redwood Creek all the way up to the tall trees grove to encompass and protect the tall trees grove. That was the southern part of Redwood National Park. Now, between 1968 and 1978, when the park expanded up to the hill slopes above this Worm and tall trees grove, the timber companies were operating, and the story I hear, and I cannot verify or otherwise, But the story that I hear was that, yes, the timber companies were aware of the fact that there were rumblings afoot that the park was going to at some point expand and protect additional or acquire additional lands to protect the downslope resource, which was the prime resource of the national park called the Tall Trees Grove. And whether they accelerated the cut or not, I can't verify that. They were cutting. The story I hear is that they were cutting round the clock, but I don't know that. I wasn't here. But certainly what we acquired as a national park in 1978 was a lot of cutover lands. Of that roughly 48,000 acres, which was mostly centered in the southern part of the park to protect the Tall Trees Grove, I'd say of that 48, maybe 40,000 acres were cutover lands. They were fairly recent cutover land.
All right.
Within the 70s.
All right. So as you understand it, more the issue was the 1978 expansion than the 1968 establishment.
Yeah.
The most recent action appears to be on Middle Fork Lost Man Creek, which apparently is near Oreck, is it?
Yeah, the town of Oreck is in the Redwood. It's near the mouth of Redwood Creek. It's a little valley, a beautiful valley, and our action for restoration is occurring within a few air miles of the town of Oreck.
And so what are the conditions there that require attention?
Well, basically, we're looking at several conditions. The high-density stands. These are stands that may have up to, at this current time, they're 50, 55-year-old stands, and they still have over 1,000 trees per acre. And so these trees are packed in pretty tight. They're tall and leggy. They're not growing very well. Their canopies are very small at the very top, the live canopy. And there's no understory vegetation to speak of. There's no recruitment of new trees. You got basically one layer of vegetation, that is the forest, the trees, and very little else. And the other conditions we're shooting for is too much Douglas fir. The timber companies and the natural seed rain after the original harvest, these stands grew back in a lot of Douglas fir to the extent that now we have, for every one redwood, we have six Doug fir, and we're trying to mitigate that by targeting Douglas fir. We're not trying to get rid of Douglas fir. That's not the intent at all. But we're trying to reduce the ratio of Douglas fir to redwood in order to provide a better mix and a better representation of what that stand would be. And by going in and thinning these stands, what we hope is to address those very high density conditions and overabundance of Douglas fir. You know, that's in a nutshell what we're trying to do, address and mitigate those very specific conditions.
We're talking to Leonel Arguello on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the Chief of Vegetation Management at Redwood National Park. So how big an area, and has work actually physically begun yet?
On the Middle Fork, no, the work hasn't begun. We're planning on beginning startup on this project in this summer. Our compliance has been completed for the project. That is to say that we have received a finding of no significant impact for this particular project from our regional director down in San Francisco.
A finding of no significant impact.
That's right. That's the FONSI. So we had that signed by the regional director of the Park Service down in San Francisco. She's approved it. And so what we're doing right now is we're in the contracting phase to put out a bid for contract and see, who's out there who might be interested in this project. We've had a one bid showing, kind of a pre, just to have people look at the site. But we'll do the formal contracting bid process coming up here shortly. And this isn't the first project that we've done. We had a previous project done starting in 2009, completed in 2011, in an adjacent stand. That was 1,700 acres in the South Fork of the middle of the Lost Man Creek.
And this is it 1125? Is that the acreage here?
Yeah, that's right. That's
okay.
Right. Yeah.
So I noticed that it's an environmental assessment was done here instead of an environmental impact statement. Is that because of the FONSI? Does the FONSI determine that you just do the EA, which is a less rigorous process?
Well, yeah, that's correct. The project itself was deemed to not have any significant impact on the natural or social environment. And so we went with the EA.
Lionel, is there merchantable timber in there? So if somebody's bidding on this, are they bidding it because there's stuff in there they could mill and turn into wood products?
That's correct. One of the things that we're doing with this, with the program to do restoration and to mitigate some of these impairments in these second growth stands, is to identify those areas where there's existing road infrastructure, because we have not removed all the roads in this park by a long shot yet. We still have much work to do there. There are roads and skid roads still in place, 50, 60 years later, still out there on the ground. And in those areas where the slopes are less than 35%, we can go in with equipment and reoccupy some of these existing infrastructure, some of the landings and some of the roads. And what we'll do is we'll thin as we can grab the trees and get them out, and we put them up on trucks and get them out of the park, so that we're not laying a bunch of fuel on the ground. And that helps for us to meet our goals for the restoration, for the thinning, by removing all of that wood. And yes, some of it is merchantable, and the way we've done our contracts is that the contractor, we put a value on the wood that we expect a contractor to remove. The contractor bids on that, and whatever their bid is, if they will pay the government back any extra that is above and beyond their profit and for the cost for their doing their work. We don't see that money here at Redwood National Park. All of that money goes to the federal treasury in Washington, D.C. So it's not a money-making venture for the national park by any stretch.
And the basic point here is just that eventually this land mimics old growth once the project's done?
Well, it won't mimic old growth, but we'll put it on a track, hopefully, for recovery. In the short term, we'll improve the conditions. In the long term, we expect that we'll have recovery of old growth, maybe a couple hundred years. That takes some time.
All right. So if all goes as planned, the work will begin this summer. Lionel Arguello is the Chief of Vegetation Management at Redwood National Park. Lionel, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Okay. No problem. Thank you.
Great to have you.